You are listening to Radiant Creators, a collaborative project composed of people whose passion, purpose, and dedication requires forging their own unique path of empowerment and livelihood. A Radiant Creator isn't making a living, they are living.
Welcome home, Radiant Creators. In this episode, we're talking to Randall, also known as Crypto Love. We've had him on before. He walked away from his YouTube channel, which is quite successful, to take a break, to figure out, well, who he is, to get deeper into himself, and to get back in touch with that excitement that really is our guiding system. And, well, he's back doing his YouTube channel again, and it's better than ever, and he's better than ever. So, enjoy this interview with Upgraded Crypto Love. Well, let's do a fun icebreaker. I always like doing that. So, you said in one of your YouTubes, you said, college is nonsense, don't do it, just start a business, because you can, if it doesn't work, you can declare bankruptcy and try again. So, do you still feel that way?
Gosh, yeah. College is like the biggest scam ever. It literally is modern slavery. Like, we've enslaved, at least in America, we've enslaved the whole entire young adult population by making them go to college to get a worthless degree where they get out and 30% can't even get jobs, can't even pay off their student debts. Most of them end up working at Starbucks or Home Depot.
Mm-hmm.
And they're stuck with, you know, debt for their entire life that they're supposed to pay off. It's criminal. And it's just kind of messed up. And yeah, I think college is absolutely worthless. Like, and everybody's going to argue, but what if you want to be a doctor? Well, fine. If you want to be a doctor, go pursue the stuff you need to do to be a doctor. But like most people, they go to undergrad. They have no idea what they want to do. They have no idea how money works. And they're just like, well, you know, you got to get an education. And you can get a better education for free at the public library. Online, if you have access to the internet, you could learn anything you want to learn on the internet. And so yeah, we've screwed over the whole entire young adult generation in America. And I strongly feel it is like the worst thing you can do. And plus, you can't bankrupt out of it. So you have two options. One, pay it off, which is really impossible for a lot of people. Or two, die. There's two options to get out of student loan debt. And that's messed up. Like, literally. Back in the day, I mean, all debts were cleared after 7 years. I think it was something like that in the Bible. But debts should just be forgiven because it's just ridiculous that they can just keep you under their thumb for your whole entire life. So I think it's a scam. And I don't stand for it.
No, I like that. Yeah. Well, it's funny. Yeah. I mean, if you want to be a doctor, if you want to be a brain surgeon, I mean, sure, there are some things that take this, you know, 12 years of study, but that's like not, I'm not sure the vast majority of people who go to college are even doing that. So we're talking about like a slight percentage of people in the first place, you know, and some people say, well, what if you want to be a doctor? Well, how many people are actually doing that are going to college? What percent are doing those 12 year like PhD degrees?
Yeah, not to mention the price of school. Like, school as an idea isn't a bad thing. Like, aside from it just being this huge cultural indoctrination, you know, education is not a bad thing, but the cost of education has gone up, like, ungodly amounts in the past 20 years, whereas the quality of the education has not improved at all, and the average salary has not improved. So, they're just basically the universities are just stealing from people thanks to the U.S. government, thanks to taxpayers.
Yeah, I like what you say about their indoctrination centers, because it doesn't seem like people that are actually coming out right now are really, you know, there's no entrepreneurial mindset. You know, to me, like, I like cities, of course, but they're also a place where it's very easy to program, indoctrinate, and control people. You know, and it seems like when you go through your initial education, then you go to college, then you go live in a city, it's like, well, that person's pretty much checked out, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we no longer even live in a society where it's beneficial to just follow the rules, because there's no guaranteed job. You can't just go work at a factory 9 to 5 for the rest of your life and be okay. Chances are you're going to change jobs every couple of years. And in order to do that, you're going to have to learn. And you're going to have to think for yourself, and you're going to have to be able to do stuff. And the gig economy is coming, where pretty much everyone's going to be working for themselves, because nobody wants to, no business, no company wants to support somebody because it's a huge liability. If they could just pay someone for a task, they're much more likely to do that. So being indoctrinated worked during the Industrial Revolution, and it definitely works to like beat the enthusiasm out of people, but it's not something that's going to, it's not something that's going to work in the future. And I think it's such a disservice to society that we're just burdening all these young people with, people get out of undergrad with a mortgage that they can't sell. You know, it used to be you went to school, you graduated high school, you got a job, you get a mortgage. Yeah, sure. If you need to move, you can sell that house and you can get your money back from that. Nowadays, you've got this unsaleable mortgage and you're just stuck with that your entire life.
Yeah, I get you. Well, and seeing as we're in the midst of that right now, this transition between, so there was the Industrial Revolution, and then also we're still sort of working that way, that same mindset in technology, let's say, because in technology, you know, okay, everybody's got to have their, you know, body at the factory every day. And there's that question of, well, why, especially when a lot of projects or companies are international. You know, so it's almost like the open source, the free software movement is really maybe more futuristic than we think, because it really is like, all right, I'm creating, I'm participating, but I don't really work for anybody. Others benefit from what I do, then so do I. You know, I don't know. Maybe that would be something for, since we're kind of crypto centric here in this interview. I mean, that would be a great. Since basically people make a blockchain or crypto for everything from, like, I don't know, you know, rockets to toilet paper, why not, let's make another one because there's not enough. So what about tokenizing open source, you know, free software, where basically you can have a crypto for your contribution towards the open source community? Boom, you'd have a bunch of like rather bland people who suddenly were millionaires the next day.
I think something like that is coming, because right now we have the attention economy where basically people, I mean, the scarcest resources right now is someone's attention, because they're busy on their phone all the time. They're looking at Facebook, Instagram, commenting on posts, doing all those different things. Eventually, one day we're going to wake up and we're going to realize we have these little like Facebook bucks on our phone that are actually worthwhile because we were the first person to upvote a post that was really popular. So something like that could potentially happen. And then it'll be really cool, because then we'll start to live in like the Ready Player One society, where you can just make money living, playing video games, living in these virtual worlds you want to. And I think we're headed there potentially 10, 20, 30 years. Who knows? If we don't destroy the world first.
Yeah, really. Well, all reality is virtual, I guess, on a certain level, even this one, because you're interpreting it. So, well, like attention being a resource that people are working with right now. If you think about it, that's basic authentication token. BAT, a new crypto, recently made it to Coinbase, you know, and the Brave browser uses it. So literally, we are actually attention is a commodity now. Yeah. You know.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And one of the scarcest, because if you look at it, like I like talking to people outside, and it's so rare to like find someone who's not just doesn't have their face buried in their phone. Like, even I live down in Florida, and driving here, cops don't enforce anything. So people are just driving with their face buried in their phone, and it's just like, it's just frightening. But that's the way things are going, because it is actually an addiction. Like, we get those dopamine hits from all the little things on our phone. And it's just we're basically addicts. But nobody really acknowledges that technology and social media are addictions.
I like it. And you can get – I mean, it's fun just to get way out there. You can think about how there's a book called Primal Mind, Primal Body by Nora, I forget her name, but and she kind of makes a statement that you can go back to Glaucopeki, that early settlement that we've now found, and that it was kind of, it's where you had hunter-gatherers living together, and then also the beginning of farming was happening there. And so, and the idea is that, her hypothesis is that they were farming grain there to make people addicted to carbohydrates, because basically hunter-gatherers didn't like to be controlled. they go, well, I'm not interested. I'm not giving you my attention. I'm going to go and, because the elk are going over there. I'm going to go over there. You know, I don't really want to work for you. But in a sense, when life became easy and there was this addiction, as she puts it, her hypothesis, to carbohydrates, to grain, well, it's like, it's funny, but our, you know, part of our society today and the Industrial Revolution ultimately came from sort of a planned addiction to grain, to food, easy food.
Yeah. Yeah, right. That is, I mean, we are kind of the sum of our habits, I think. Aristotle says something like that, like we're, I don't know. Yeah, our habits define us, and addictions form a lot of habits. And that's something that I've been, because I spend a lot of time meditating, and I always look at things I'm addicted to, like whether it be food or television or sex or whatever. It's just these like impulses and why I want to go do them. Yeah. But I guess that's where we came from. I mean, initially it was for the benefit of our societies. We had these addictions for a reason, like just the sexual urge itself, even though it's not maybe an addiction, but that was there for a reason, to procreate. Otherwise we wouldn't have made it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you can get, it's funny where for, if you look at a, oh God, what is it? Not Zen, but it's kind of like, oh, I forget what Asian discipline, but it might be, it's not Tai Chi. It's one of the many, but their take on it is like where a male should only, it's like your age minus this, but plus whatever you shouldn't orgasm any more often than that,
yeah,
or else it starts to deplete you. Yeah. Yeah. And
it makes sense. It makes sense. 'Cause your body is putting its best energy into your semen in order to carry forth life. And if you just, you know, shoot that into a rag or a sock or in the toilet or wherever, or into another person, you just got to be conscious of how often and where you're shooting it.
Yeah, if you moon too often, then, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're going to crash hard.
There's always that retrace. Yeah, I like that. Well, so,
I mean, I can tell from personal experience that, like, because I do practice that, and I noticed that, like, I got a lot of creativity when I wasn't, masturbating anymore, when I wasn't having sex anymore. I had a lot more creativity, because even Napoleon Hill talks about it in Think and Grow Rich, how like that energy needs to go somewhere. You can either shoot it out of your nether regions, or you could harness it to create.
Yeah, I agree. And it's kind of, and if you can manage that, I you know, it kind of, talk about the power of aggravation, the power of anger. I mean, it gives you this just, you know, yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's so, people, try that if you like, you know, it might make you better at technical analysis or, I mean, there you go. That's the key to being a good technical, you know, TA is, there you go. A little tip from us. So
that's the trick.
Yeah. That's the secret. So, I mean, so one of the things that we're, you know, here today about is that you took a break. So you have a successful YouTube channel and doing well, making mega bucks and huge following and loved by millions. And so, and you were like, well, I'm not really digging this. So you said you kind of needed to figure out what you really wanted to do. And so you were taking a break from that. You're going to go and hang out in the desert for 40 days, 40 nights, you know, grow your beard longer to figure out what. So what's all that been about? So you, now I admire that, because you had something that was working and you kind of took a risk. You went, I'm going to see you guys. I'll be back, but I'm going to get out of here for a little while and figure out what I want to do. And that's like, that's rare. I like to just go into that some from some different angles. And now you're back.
Yeah. So now I'm back. So, I guess I was burned out. So like severely burned out. So how I got into YouTube was just for fun. Like I was working 60 hours a week as an emergency veterinarian, and I really got into crypto, and I saw some funny crypto YouTube channels, and I was like, hey, I'll give this a shot. I said, I'll do a video a day for a month and see what happens. Well, after that, started to gain some traction, and I was like, okay, I'll do 2 months. And if I'm able to do a video a day for 2 months, I'll buy myself a new computer, because my computer took like 2 hours to render a video. So each day it was just rendering for hours and hours. So I got there, and then right around there, things started to really pick up. And then I was like, okay, I'll do 100 days. And then at 100 days in a row, I was like, let's see if I can do a year in a row, a video a day for a year. And this is like, this is weekends as well. This was 7 days a week. And actually in a year, I did close to like 500 videos in a year. And so I was doing way more than one a day. And then it became a habit. So we're talking about addictions. It became a habit. Like, this is what I do. I wake up, I make a video. And sometimes there was nothing going on in the markets. Like, sometimes there was really nothing going on in crypto, but I just make a video because that was what I was doing. I was making a video. And I, after a while, especially with the markets taking a downturn and really, like, there was just lack of stuff to report on there. I just got really, really burnt out. And it was just like, it was a grind making the videos. Like, because I really wanted to deliver content to make it worthwhile to people, because I realized that we're in an attention economy. And if somebody's going to watch my videos, that's, you know, 10 or 20 minutes of their time. They're not doing something else. And I really appreciate their attention and I don't want to waste their time. So, after a while, I was just making a video. And I started getting just like, I'm going to say burnout again, because there's not much of a better word for it. It was just a grind doing it every day. And I realized that I was losing myself in just making these videos day after day. And I really wasn't doing it for the reasons that I love doing it. Like, I got into it because I had a lot of fun. I love crypto. I think it's one of the best things that's going to happen to societies, but I just kind of lost all that stuff. And it was difficult to take a break, because I was like, I can't quit now. Like, this is, you know, this is the worst time. I don't know what's going to happen. People stop watching. But I was like, I can't keep going on this way. So I made a video, and I wanted it to be kind of a clickbaity video to make people think that I was like quitting forever. And a lot of people did think I was quitting forever and were pretty pissed off. But it was a necessary time to kind of take a step back and just relax. Like, I didn't look at crypto for 2 weeks. I didn't look at anything crypto. I didn't look at anything on YouTube. I didn't see what was going on with the markets, no Telegram, nothing. I just took some time off and just relaxed. And I think it was good to take a step back, because then I got to see, like, what am I doing? Where am I going? What's the point of this channel? And really, my goal with the channel is to deliver value, to help people get the results they want to find in crypto, to help to entertain them, to educate them, to make it worth their time. And so that is more what I'm focusing on now, where I'm not making videos every day anymore, even though I still feel like the nagging addiction to make a video every day. But I'm not making videos every day. I'm spreading them out and trying to make them better quality content, trying to make it more content that I enjoy and also content that other people enjoy. And yeah, that was pretty much the story.
I think that I think a lot of people are not really aware of how much effort goes into that 20 minutes that you're doing a day. You know, I mean, I can say that every interview that we do here, on average, it's probably, you know, 8 to 12 hours of work by the time it's actually posted and gone, you know, and that's not counting sometimes really like the scheduling. 'Cause it's like, that's like maybe one of the biggest pains in the asses out of all this is actually scheduling, because people, I mean, if I had someone just to like schedule for me and tell me like, you know, talk to this person here, learn about them, I'd be like, it'd be 90% easier. So, I mean, I admire that you did it every day, 'cause it's extraordinary. That's a pain in the ass. I mean, with putting out that many videos, like one a day, how much time did you have for life outside of it?
Well, for probably, let's just say from when I started the channel up until about 3-4 months ago, it was like an all day endeavor. There was literally no time off. Like, all I did was crypto. And then after a while, I started making more time for myself, but especially in the beginning, because, you know, at first I was just learning how to do all of it, learning how to edit videos, learning how to create videos, learning how to make thumbnails on Photoshop, learning how to do the SEO for YouTube, all this different stuff that I was learning. So anytime that I wasn't researching for the videos, I was busy learning all these other skills. Then the market took off, and at that point it was just about creating more and more content, creating courses, trying to do things that people asked, like create things that they wanted. So just creating. And then until a few months ago, where it really got to be, okay, it was like a 6 hour a day job. Like I'd wake up, I'd meditate, I'd go work out, and then I would just do research for a few hours to create a video. And then I'd create the video and then edit it if I need to, do any other type of updates. And then sometime in the early afternoon, I'd be done it. But it was it ended up being, I would say at the minimum would be like 3 to 6 hours for a video. But maximum, it was like for a good year, it was all that I was, when I wasn't sleeping, it was all that I was doing.
Yeah, I think that the time it takes to produce, people don't always realize that they'll think that, oh, he just hops on, talks 20 minutes, then he's done. And it's like, oh, I wish, you know. Well, I mean, so there's a great channeled entity, if one believes in such things. If they don't, it's all right. I'm crazy. So if everything I say is worthless, that's fine. I'm nuts. It's all right. I believe in channeled entities. So Bashar, a great channeled entity, he says, like, he really speaks about the importance of following your excitement. And so what I like is that, so you have cultivated a center. So like through yoga, through meditation, you have this place that never changes, and then from there you find guidance, you can create from that place. And then also, you know, if you can get yourself there, you can kind of, it's like, where is it? You got to feel for that, like, where is that excitement? And like he's saying, that's really like the essence of success in life. If we would do just fine, all of our problems can be fixed by following our excitement. There's got to be something that, even if it just is like, it feels the less shitty of all the options. You know, it's like, okay, this feels the least crappy.
Mm-hmm. You know? Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I noticed that, like, when I was getting burned out, it was because I wasn't spending as much time meditating as I normally was. I was losing those beneficial habits that I had that helped keep me centered and helped keep me moving forward.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people, they just don't have that. And that's the call. I think it's really important, especially now, if you're into crypto, is that you've cultivated some interests like meditation, yoga, riding your bike, cooking, whatever it is. It's like, it's kind of, people retire and then they die, you know, because they never really cultivated interests. And it seems like to me, like, you're never bored and you're always having a great time in life when you have, you know, a closet full of interests that you want to get to, you know, like, so while you were out kind of getting yourself recalibrated to now put out content that works for you, that feels good, it's exciting. Like, what were you out doing? Like what excited you to do to, like, get yourself rebooted and back doing videos? Not that you have to do videos. I'm just glad that you're back. So, like, what interest did you go pursue to charge up?
For me, a lot of it is kind of the spirituality type of thing. So I've been doing yoga every day since March. So it's coming up, I don't know what month we are, coming up on a year now. Been doing that, and that's been really beneficial. I've gone to see a chiropractor every day for a while just to address some, like, I've had issues with my back and neck for like 10 years that I've just been putting off because it wasn't important. It wasn't making me money. So, like, taking care of some of those things, meditating as often as possible, 2 to 3 times a day, reading a lot, because reading, I really enjoy reading, and you know, I was too busy to take the time to read. And then I did pick up a habit of binge watching shows on like Netflix and Amazon Prime. I'm not sure if that's a beneficial habit, but it's something where allowing myself time to relax and just to unwind, because that's something for a long time I've always been so had such a strong work ethic, been so hard at pushing myself forward that I just haven't allowed myself time to just, like, relax and vegetate.
Oh, I get it. I know for me, it's one of the things that I'm working on is that that angst when it comes to relaxing. It's like you don't It's like, for me, sometimes sleeping can be a challenge like that. You're just like, no. And like in the morning you wake up, you're like, oh, get me out of this. You know? And so I think that it's really important to schedule our life to some extent. Like Jocko Willink in his book, I think I'm saying his name right. Whatever his name of his book was, Total Ownership or something like that. He says that discipline is freedom, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like, oh, that's like, oh, why do you say things you know will hurt me?
yeah, that's a tough one because it's true, but it's also like really difficult sometimes. Like, and usually it's those times when it's really difficult that you need it the most. Like, I mean, I've said I've been going to yoga for almost, I mean, I've been doing yoga for a long time, but every day for almost a year. And it's the same postures every single day. And so it's like getting there and going there and doing it every day. And those days when I don't want to do it the most, those are the days when it's, because the yoga doesn't really change. It's just like our own, what's going on within us and why is there such resistance to go there? Why are these things coming up? So kind of it is a self-exploration and we kind of learn those things. The discipline allows us to experience the self-realization. Cause if we were undisciplined, if we didn't have these things that we do every day, we wouldn't even notice when the resistances came up and when the wants and desires came up.
Oh, I like that. That actually makes a lot of sense. Like the yoga doesn't change. That routine does like what, 26 postures, they don't change, you know. And oftentimes they're in the same order every time. And but yeah, I mean, that can be the hardest thing to do. You know, I know I've like started a yoga, you know, class and been like fearful. You're just like, oh my God. It's like, it's funny where like it's, I love that because this routine never changes, but you get to see how you're changing, how what's going on within you, you know, mm-hmm. because like if people only knew like the mental disaster I was while I was doing the postures, you know, you look mm-hmm. nice and cool and you're stretching and all, but then inside you're just like, absolute disaster.
Yeah. And like sometimes when I'll be lost in thought, I'll find myself in the complete wrong pose for like half a minute. And then I'm like, oh, welcome back. Come back to Earth. And yeah, you know, it teaches you a lot about yourself. And one of the reasons I did it is because it is something that I can do the rest of my life. It's not a sport, like an extreme contact sport or something like CrossFit or something like that is probably great, but that's not something that I could do for the rest of my life. But yoga is something that I potentially could, and I could learn a lot from as well.
Yeah, I like that. And CrossFit always seems like if I woke up and I was, you know, having a nightmare, I'd be doing CrossFit. Because to me, like, there's nothing that seems more ridiculous than like running around the block with a tire. I'm like, this is what I would do in hell forever. Just run a circle with a tire, you know. Yeah, dragging a rope.
Like if I wanted to figure out a way to injure myself as soon as possible, I would go do CrossFit. But I have done it, and it's fun. But I think it's for certain people.
And with yoga, do you find there's something valuable, almost like essential to me about going to a yoga class? Like I wish you could just get a DVD and follow it along, or just remember the poses and do it. But it seems like it just doesn't take place outside of a studio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've spoken with a few people about this, and really, like the people I've spoken to who have actually maintained like a daily practice by themselves, they only got that after going and doing like a 200-hour or 500-hour teacher training, where they really got that it was like about themselves. But for me, yeah, I've tried doing it from a video, and I don't feel it. Because when you go in a studio, there's so much energy in there, and like the place, and you can tell. I've been to probably like at least 50 different yoga studios in my life, and out of those, two are like very remarkable because they have this great positive energy there. Fortunately, one is the one that I go to right now, and you can tell because on a Saturday or Sunday morning, the studio is packed. There's probably like 80 or 100 people in there. You're like sweating on top of your neighbor. But the energy is so phenomenal, and it's just like you get so high by the time you're done a class, It's great.
Oh, I like that. Well, so that is great, the importance of interest. So, I mean, it's great that you were able to take a break and, you know, realign. And it seems like, you know, part of what made that possible was just having interests, you know, having interest. It's like, I know I kind of go on about it, but it is amazing how many people in our society right now truly have no interests. It almost worries me. It's like, don't you have hobbies? Like, and it can be anything. You could make models, you could like gardening, you could, there should be a couple, but there's just really, we're living in a time of, and I'm probably sounding kind of harsh, but sort of like zero interest people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it comes back to the attention economy. Our attention is just, I think like back in the day, we used to have spare time and we thought technology was this thing that was going to give us even more time, but we didn't realize that it was just going to enable us to be advertised to nonstop. Like, it literally just sucks our attention away. I mean, I don't remember what it was like that much because I was like 18 when cell phones came out and, when I first got mine. But before then, like, you had nothing to do and you just kind of sat around and had nothing to do. And it's like, oh, maybe I'll go find something. Oh, look at this. I can paint that. Or there's a puzzle or a board game. Like, when was the last time anyone played a board game, for goodness sake? Or a game like, and even console, like video games. I grew up playing video games, but like console gaming, it used to be where you call your friends up and, you know, two of you would play together or four of you would play together. Nowadays, you can't even do that on the modern consoles. Like, you have to play on a separate console. So, you know, somebody has to be at their house, somebody else has to be at their other house. It's crazy. So, yeah, we're living in a different time and it's going to be, I'm scared for what's going to happen to be honest. I'm kind of scared, but, you know, it'll make us, we'll change however we need to change.
Well, that's the thing about the cell phone. Like, we're already, you know, a quarter of the way to transhumanism. I mean, people might say, oh, I don't like the idea of transhumanism. I personally don't. But your cell phone, I mean, if you got your iPhone, that's transhumanism.
Yeah, and like Neuralink is going to be coming out soon to where, I think that's with Elon Musk, you can just plug into we're going to be living in the Matrix. If we're not already. Okay, we could already be living in the Matrix, but if not, we're going to be there very soon. Like, the speed of technology is just amazing. And, you know, just from virtual reality devices that they have, like, I mean, like, I have a friend who's like, dude, you got to try VR porn. It's like amazing. And it's just like, you know, as soon as we have VR porn and like a fleshlight that does it automatically and tactile sensors all over our body, it's game over. It's game over. Nobody's going to want to take that thing off ever.
Oh, I think that's been proven in studies with, like, you know, monkeys and stuff like that, where they like put the little, you know, wire in the brains and it would it zapped the part of the brain that controls orgasms. They could just push a button and orgasm, and they pretty much just died with their finger on the trigger. So I guess we know how that's going to work out. You know, yep. Idiocracy is, unfortunately, it's so close. It's here on many levels, you know. Mm. Well, there's a guy, Jordan Peterson, in his book, 12 Rules for Life. And he wrote about one of the downsides to porn, and ultimately maybe one of the downsides to VR when you get extreme with it, is that addiction in the brain. Like, if they scan the brain and they look at the parts that are activated and how they're activated and how they function when it comes to drug addiction, and they actually, when people watch porn, it's the same thing. So it's almost like, I have nothing against it, it's just that there's an aspect of it which it's a bit of a silent killer, because people would say, well, this is just, you know, porn, big deal, but at the same time, what's happening in the brain is the same as somebody doing heroin, and mm-hmm. and it gets progressively degenerative in mm-hmm. the brain. So it's sort of like, I don't know, it's weird. Like, once I learned that, I became kind of afraid of it, and I'm just like, nah, I don't. I'm just like, nope, I'm afraid of that, because I know that that's like, I wouldn't want to look at that anymore at this point than I would want to do heroin, because it's this, you know, it's the same things happening in the brain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's crazy. Like, people used to fantasize back in the day. They don't do that anymore. They just turn on their computer and go get – and like, most of the time, it's like a 1 to 3 minute thing. And it's like, guys wonder why they don't last in the bedroom. Well, you've trained yourself your whole life to be done in like 3 minutes flat. So, I mean, that's part of it. The other thing is, my buddy just showed me this article that we're living in the most undersexed time ever, like ever. And social media is mostly to blame because, number one, people don't know how to talk to people anymore. Like, they're used to interacting through a phone, so they don't know how to go up to someone on the street and say, hey, you know, you look really great, let's go out. They also are used to using dating apps, which are absolutely worthless. Like, I haven't used those in years just because they're terrible. Number one, they only favor the really attractive people. And then you've got to go through all these hoops, like weeks of just this stupid mundane conversation on there just to like get someone out to realize, oh, you're not that attracted to them anyways. So that's really crazy. And then, those are like the barriers to actually getting into a relationship. Then when you're in a relationship, people are too busy on social media to actually have sex. They're so distracted, they don't even have sex anymore. So it's a pretty crazy thing. It's the wonderful world we're living in right now.
Well, yeah, like you mentioned, people used to fantasize, and it makes me wonder, of course, that's a certain kind of, you know, fantasizing, but also just fantasizing in general. People, like, become more transhuman, are we losing that ability to, you know, visualize, to dream, to imagine? Because ultimately, like you read Think and Grow Rich and such like that, and other books I'm sure like it, like maybe the Abraham Mitchell or you know, and such. I mean, really, a lot of the ways that we as humans, if a person has a spiritual edge, or if they're just off their charts like me and you're not, then basically you do believe that you kind of visualize it and you create it. And are mm-hmm. we losing that ability to visualize and create what we're about, like what our little soul showed up for, you know? And we're just basically taking on consensus reality. That's what I fear about, you know, transhumanism, is that we are just living consensus reality rather than actually authentically creating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, because there's something like the average person watches like 6 hours of TV a day in the United States. Some more, some less, obviously. But when you're watching TV, there's no thought going on whatsoever. You basically just implant in whatever reality is there. And so if you're spending that much, because that's like, you know, approaching half of your waking time. And I think like back in the day, people just – actually, I shouldn't speak, because who knows what people did back in the day. All I can say is that, you know, when you take the time to actually – sit and visualize, that's when you can make things happen. And I think a lot of stuff that I've done in my life is because I've taken the time to actually quiet the mind, and sit and have, you know, create visions for what I want my life to be. Like, it's funny, I keep journals, and every once in a while I go back and I look at them and I'm like, holy cow, all that stuff that I wanted to do, I've done. And you know what? That was actually another part. So like when I was burned out, I think I probably had like a midlife crisis too, because I just realized like all this stuff that I've wanted to do, like all my childhood dreams, I've done them. And now it's like, great. So, you know, where do I go from here? Like I always thought that like once I got to these places, then I wouldn't have problems anymore. You know, I would just like, you know, once I was a veterinarian and once I did this and did that, then I wouldn't have these problems anymore. But that's not true. The problems are just there all the time. There's a funny saying that like all of man's problems come from his inability to sit still and do nothing. And I mean, very true. And so that's kind of what I work on now. Like the material things I've wanted in life, I've pretty much gotten most, or if not all of them. It's the sitting still and allowing myself to be. That's like the biggest challenge, and that's the one that I'm working on now.
I think it's a biblical line, or it's a saying, I'm not sure. You know, be still and know that I am God. That's it. Mm-hmm. You know, people have a hard time with that. You know, be still, know, very difficult. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
3 seconds, and then after that,
That's it. Yeah. 1 to 3 minutes and I'm done. Yeah. It's like, well, something you mentioned about, you know, writing, like writing your vision. I mean, that's something, you know, like we're coming up on a new year. It's almost Christmas. And like, you know, I can't really help, but, you know, in a conversation like this, recommend to people, write your year. You know, like, and don't have to share it with people. You probably shouldn't, you know, and write, like, and be bold. Like, what's this most badass year you could imagine 2019 being for you? What are these things that you would like, that your heroic self would like to do? You know, almost act like you're somebody else coaching you. Act like, you know, like you're a person you're coaching. And how would you treat yourself? How would you treat another person just like you? Like, write this amazing vision for 2019. And if you check in on it once in a while, you might edit it a little bit. But I mean, I think people will be surprised how many things they that they could check off if they just had a vision for themselves, for what they wanted to do.
Yeah, and it's been shown that you're statistically much more likely to achieve your goals if you do write them down. And it's such like it's such a low barrier to entry, like literally picking up a pen and writing it down, and it's much, much, much more likely to come true, which is crazy. But yeah, I don't share my goals with other people because I think I wanna show them first. Like, I see it and it's going to take a little while to manifest. But I want to show them when it's manifested and then be like, ha, that was something I said and created, as opposed to telling them now and then being like, well, you haven't gotten there yet, have you? And it's like, yeah, well, whatever.
Oh, I get it. Yeah. Because sometimes people's critique and their feedback, nothing can throw a wrench in the gears quicker, you know, because you're sort of doing it your own way. You're feeling for that excitement. You're changing. You're going, well, I'm going this way. Now I got to go this way to keep, you know, on my path. And other people's opinions are, they're a hindrance. I mean, sometimes we need feedback, but that's, I wouldn't say rare. You need feedback when you've accomplished something. But you got to accomplish it first.
Especially sharing with people you love and trust because you really value their opinions. And like, they love you, but how are they supposed to know what the future holds for you? You know? And a lot of people have been stopped from creating businesses or from doing really daring things just because they shared it with someone they loved and trusted and they just didn't get the feedback they wanted. So yeah, for me, I just keep it. And then when it's done, I'm like, ha.
Oh, I like it. I like it. Well, when you kind of decided to take your little, you know, your, you know, 40 days in the desert, I call it, just to help get realigned with, you know, what excites you with your passions. The first thing I thought of was this Ernest Hemingway quote. I've always dug it, where he says, like, the world breaks everyone, and afterwards, many are stronger. Well, I'm sorry, I screwed that up. The world breaks everyone, and afterward, many are strong at the broken places, you know? Mm-hmm. And it goes on, but those that will not break, it kills. Mm-hmm. And he says, it kills the very good and the very gentle and the very brave impartially. And he goes on to say, if you are none of these, you can be sure it will kill you too, but there will be no special hurry. Mm. And so, I don't know, it's like, you know, if you do have those times of having to reboot and find yourself, if you do have, like, if it feels like life is trying to kill you sometimes, I feel like, well, maybe I'm on the right track. Because, gosh, like, I don't even know what to make of that quote. I've stared at it so much, and it just feels like, well, at least I'm happy for when life seems like it's just trying to kill me.
Well, it makes a lot of sense to me. So, like, on one level, there's what he's talking about with, like, bending so you don't break. I mean, down here in Florida, all the palm trees, they can really bend and move because we have hurricanes coming through all the time. If we had like hardwood trees like they have up north, they would just break because there's no bend in them. So being able to bend and not break, that's definitely part of it. Another thing is like in some Asian cultures, when something breaks, they fill in the crack with gold to like add to its beauty. So like if there's a vase that cracks or something like that, they'll fix it and they'll fill in the crack with gold. Because that crack actually helps create more beauty. And I mean, I feel that like a lot of the stuff I've been doing with meditation has been like heart-based practices just because I've been a very intellectual person my whole life. I've spent most of my life up in my head. And so coming down and actually living in my heart and experiencing through my heart has been a lot. But through that, I've felt a lot of heartbreak, a lot of sadness, a lot of different things like that. But it's those it's those cracks that actually allow my heart to open, allow it to expand, allow the light in. So all of those parts are really beneficial. And I think that, you know, there's another aspect of it, like, where it's just, it, life literally is killing the current us so that we can create a new one. It's like Callie the Destroyer. She destroys everything so that new stuff can come from it. Or just breaking down the ego. Like, I can tell every time I've been really, really, really down, it's because I've just been tired of doing whatever I've been doing, tired of carrying that persona. And then once I finally let that go and move forward, life is exciting again. It's all there. But it's like trying to carry that burden is just too much. And that's when life just, you know, breaks you down for your own benefit.
Yeah. Well, it's like my, I remember my grandmother said, you know, the heart only feels as deeply as it's been broken. Mm. And so you kind of start to like honor that heartbreak and go, wow, so there's a depth I didn't know I had. I feel from a deeper place now, mm-hmm. you know? So I guess it is good when life, because metaphorically sort of breaks us, you know? And
yeah, that is so true. Like I have compassion that I had never thought I would have had from just like the suffering that I've done. I can relate with people so much better because when they're going through stuff, like I can physically feel it because I've been there and I've done that. And that is, you know, like what your grandmother said. I mean, that is, for a long time, I was just very selfish. I didn't feel with other people. And, but it opens, I don't know, it opens the heart and allows you to feel, and it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, well, it seems like the more authentically creative, you know, life a person is able to muster as they develop, it does seem that, like with Hemingway, just saying that, you know, it kills the very good and the very gentle and the very brave impartially. You know, if you're none of these, it just kills you slowly. So it seems like, yeah, I mean, life is, or you could say universe, God force, is killing. We're constantly always shedding our skin. We're always becoming a new version of ourselves, and that definitely creates compassion, especially towards oneself, because you got to start to be like, yeah, I love that me at 21 and 13, because you start looking back going, gosh, I was an asshole, oh, unbearable. And that guilt is either going to drive you crazy, or you're going to have to just love all those versions of yourself, and even this one.
Yeah, it's like learning to accept what is, and just like exactly as it is. Like, I mean, I said earlier that I had some like issues with my back, and just like some of them are things that can't be fixed. They can only be like managed. And just like, you know, when I found out that stuff, I was like, man, that really just sucks. But like learning to live with that and being like, okay, this is just something to keep moving forward with. Like that's part of this experience that I'm living now. And what can I do with it?
Yeah, something has been noticed around here recently is how the more you progress, the more like velocity you get of creativity, of, you know, just being an authentic life. You start to bring up shadow, you know, like the things you don't want to deal with, the things that you need to work on. And sometimes they can build up and they can start to drive you crazy. And so it seems like, so as you're getting on this more, even more authentic path, this like new version of Crypto Love, you know, is coming out. You had to, I mean, it's metaphorical and it's not. It's both. It's kind of a paradox. So like that back pain you had never really dealt with, that's shadow that you didn't, that's aspects that you did not, of yourself, you didn't deal with. So it comes, it appears to be physical. It is physical, but it's also not. It's, I mean, it ultimately has roots in it's intellectual, it's biological, it's physical, it's spiritual, it's everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it manifests in a way that we can actually address it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's learning to see. I mean, I think a lot of what we've spoken about today is just about consciousness and awareness, and like learning to see those things that we ignore, and learning to see those things that we resist or those things we cling to, because, you know, even with the darkness, there's darkness and there's light, but they can't exist without the other one. And so learning to see both sides of it and accept both sides of it and really like relish in both sides of it. Like for a long time, I pushed, like actually for 30 some years, I just repressed any type of sadness I had, just like completely repressed it, wouldn't even acknowledge it. And then once I stopped doing that, then I just had these like waves of profound sadness coming over, and it was like absolutely terrible, and I just wanted nothing to do with it. But then it got to a point where it was just like I was able to see the beauty in the sadness. And it was kind of like why some people pay money to go to a film where it makes them feel sad, because it's like actually feeling the emotion and enjoying all of it. Because even in sadness, there is some joy, there is some beauty, there is some comfort. And it's just being able to sit with those things as they come up and experience them that really makes a difference.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Well, well, most of us are getting there. We're all getting there. Just a matter of velocity, you know? Yeah. Well, it's funny. I can think one of my odd things I've been dealing with when it comes to shadow recently is like, it's hope for the world, you know? Mm-hmm. And people think, well, do you have optimism? Do you believe in a good future, you know? And as odd as it may sound, I kind of came to this, like to peace with that question. This probably sounds awful, but my answer is no. I actually not sure if I really have a positive. I'm not sure if I really see a positive direction for the world. But you know what? I do for me, and mm-hmm. I do for like you. I do for the fellowship of people that I know. And outside of that, the world's not my friggin' problem, you know. Mm-hmm. And if I need the world to have a positive, you know, future for me to be happy or for me to, you know, continue growing spiritually, intellectually, you know, becoming more physically fit, you know, more spiritually aware. If the world has to do it too, well, I'm not going to get any further than the world does. Mm-hmm. And that's not fast enough or far. I'm on the hurry up. I'm not waiting around. The consensus will take several million more years, you know, and I want to get there like, I don't know, maybe, you know, three more incarnations, let's call it done. Then I'll just go to the next kind of groovy earth plane where like you're just astral and you can just party.
And just have your finger on the orgasm button.
Just, planet orgasm where we just...
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's good, because one quote that I've always liked was Gandhi, who said, be the change you want to see in the world. And, you know, like you said, who knows what's going to happen with the world? I honestly agree with you very much. Like, I'm quite frightened about what's going to happen in the world. But that's not in my circle of influence. That's not in my control. All that I can do is I can be the best person that I can be, that I can be the most compassionate, the most loving, the most peaceful, the most wonderful person that I can be, and hope that makes a positive difference. And if I can do that, then I've done everything that I can possibly do.
I like it. I like it. That is perfect. I think we covered a lot of ground, you know. I mean, thanks for showing up today. I mean, it's great, you know.
My pleasure. I love the interviews you do. I get a lot of value from them, and I think they I love the topics that you explore. They're not mundane, you know. Yeah. They're really relevant topics and really like perk my interest.
Well, that's something I'd ask before we wrap it up is, you know, you do interviews too. You interview people, and they're great. And I mean, interviewing people, as you know, it's extreme. You know, like one thing I would say is that you have to care about what you're interviewing about, and you have to have an interest. You should do some research, etc. And one of the hardest things is, even when you're ready, you have to be on that day. You know, and mm-hmm. sometimes when I do interviews, I'm like, oh my God, it's like the last friggin' thing I want to do in this universe. Even if you're ready, you're like, you know, I just don't feel like it right now. But that's that discipline. You're like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to be on, even if it's like doing yoga. It's like the interview never really changes. But so I might be like looking good, feeling powerful. But like I'm in that pose and inside I'm like, oh God, you know, I just want to, I'm hungry. Or something like that. Yeah. So what have been some of your interview struggles? Like how have you gotten to be a good interviewer? Like what are some of your interview tips or things that people, because we have a lot of people who interview people who listen to this podcast, you know, and what are some of your, you know, tips for them?
Yeah. So I say the first thing is you never know how it's going to turn out. Like, we as humans are terrible at predicting the future. Absolutely terrible. And like, I mean, interviews, you have no idea. Some of my best interviews I thought were going to be terrible, and some of my and vice versa. So you never know. You got to show up. Like Woody Allen, he said some like 90% of success is showing up. You got to show up and just do it and see what happens. Because if it is terrible, it's terrible. But at least it's done. So that's part of it. I would also, you know, just try and be present with the person. Like that's a lot of areas in life, just trying to be present with the person, because that's really what we all look for, is just kind of this presence, this being with other people. So that is part of it. I mean, I've had a lot of interviews. Probably the biggest difficulties for mine is a lot of cryptocurrency companies are Asian based. And well, not even Asia, just all over the world. And so a lot of times just like difficulty understanding what people were saying. There was one interview that happened. One interview I actually had to stop because I was interviewing someone for a cryptocurrency, and their chief marketing officer knew absolutely nothing about the cryptocurrency. Absolutely nothing. They were reading answers off of a sheet because they wanted me to send them like pre-scripted questions, which I never do, because it's like you should know something about your cryptocurrency. So I sent like some basic stuff. I'm like, what's your cryptocurrency? What is it? Blah, 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 blah. So I sent some basic stuff. The chief marketing officer prepared answers to those questions, and that was it. And so I just like freeform some questions. And she'd just be like, had a paper in front of her, visible on the camera, just reading the answer to a different question than what I asked. And after like two questions, I was like, do you know anything about this? Like, do you know anything about this cryptocurrency? And she's like, well, we just need to do this stuff. And I was like, forget it. That's done. We're done. Yeah. But I don't know. My only tip is you never know what's going to happen. Try and have fun with it. And yeah, enjoy.
I like that. And it makes me think about, you have to ask yourself sometimes, well, is it about me anyway? Or is it about what I'm, you know, what the show is about? Because like for me, you know, Radiant Creators is really at the heart. It's about interviewing inspiring people to inspire others. And that's really the mission. And so I guess I do my best too, just to show up for the interview. And yeah, you never really know what's going to happen. And I think I'm always nervous before the interview. You know, it's like if you're not nervous, then you're probably burnt out or not interested. You should be like, oh my God, you know? And also I think for me, one that I've had to realize is you're getting better every interview, you know? And I think that you have to kind of start to be able to live with the fact that your last one will always suck. Like, you'll never be happy with it. You're like, I could have done better, because you're getting better every moment and better every interview. So I don't dwell on that, but I think people will be like, oh gosh, it wasn't perfect. Did I sound good? Did I not? Did I, you know, did I get my point across? And I think really it shouldn't be about you. It should be about your mission. And if you showed up and you worked at it, just publish the damn thing, post it, you know, and just let it go. If you're inspired to do what you're doing, trust that something inspired came through that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, just doing it and getting it out there. The perfect is the enemy of the good. Just getting it out there. Like, I would never have a YouTube channel if I just didn't say, what the heck? I'll just give it a try and just put it out there. And it was nerve-wracking in the beginning, but just doing it, because you never know what's going to happen. And I like to think that the universe supports us. So, yeah.
Yeah, and people like the authenticity. I think it's a good thing about the Crypto Love channel is you're just authentically you. And that's a good practice for people because, you know, there's many, well, crypto channels, but, you know, many different YouTubes, many different projects that people are doing where they're so concerned about their perfection and it being like they're almost trying to hide themselves behind perfection. And that shit is so dry. I it really is.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for being on the show. It's been great. And I'll get this out probably the day after Christmas we'll put this out.
Awesome. Craig, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. And we'll talk to you again. Boom shakalaka. You do it best.
Boom shakalaka.
Peace. Thanks for listening to Radiant Creators. Check out more content at radiantcreators.com. If you like the show, give it a like. Share this. Comment. Keep the conversation going. You can also find us at alternatecurrentradio.com, where there's this show and a lot more.